And welcome back to the Roundtable on a Tuesday morning, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and good morning to you, our panel. Now it's time for the panel, and what a panel we have. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello. You're subbing for Joe this week, and we love it when you do. We got a lot of nice mail about how good you are.
Really?
What a big place you represent in this room.
Oh, I see. Associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Ray. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. And Empire Report's J.P. Miller. Good morning, J.P.
Good morning, Ray. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have all of you here. The email address is roundtable. No, it's not. It's panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. If you hear something we discussed this morning and you want to make a point, try to keep it brief. Don't include links and don't use abbreviations. Try to proofread if you can. Not much to ask. And one email per customer per day, please. It's panel at WAMC.org. Any pleasantries that we need to exchange before we get going here? How was the weekend?
Good long weekend. Did you enjoy President's Day?
I did indeed.
Right. Now, remember, it's just two presidents that we honor.
Lincoln and Washington.
Right.
However, there was a poll today in the paper. I read it in Empire Report that J.P. Miller puts out. I got it. I think, I don't know who did it, but it's a reputable organization. And, of course, Donald Trump comes out the last of all the presidents, you know, in everybody's opinion. They did political scientists and historians, although my ballot must have gotten lost in the mail.
Yeah, this was the current and former members of the American Political Science Association, Presidents and Executive Politics section.
Are you a current or former member of such?
Former, all right. Long time.
They kicked me out years ago.
So they ranked the presidents on President's Day, and in order, top seven, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, FDR, Teddy Roosevelt, Thomas Jefferson, Harry Truman, and Dwight Eisenhower.
I love the fact that Harry's in there, because Harry was a great president, but I remember going to the Riverside Theater on 96th Street and Broadway, and they always had newsreels. Course, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that?
That's the way it was. Yeah.
So the newsreel would come on, and they'd show Harry's face, and everybody in the place would go, boo! He had his moments of real unpopularity.
That's true. They didn't think he was going to win that election in 1948.
Yeah, they sure didn't. That's right.
The first fake news, yeah?
Yeah.
The most famous.
That's right, most famous headline.
And I think Nixon came out 33rd?
Did not. I don't have the full
ranking.
Yeah,
it was something like that. Yeah, I read that Empire Report.
And Trump 50.
Trump 50 and...
by a lot.
President Obama 8th, up 10 spots from 18th in 2014. W moved up to 30th from 35th. Ronald Reagan also moved into the top 10, ranking 9th in 2014. He was 11th.
Well, Trump must have been 45 because there's only been 45 presidents.
No, he was 50th. That's the whole point.
Don't you think it's a little early? Regardless of who the president is, is it fair to rank them in the list of presidents when they were only in the office for a year?
I don't agree. I suspect Ray of loading the question here.
No, his job isn't done yet. I mean, how can you get a real assessment of his presidency when it hasn't been completed? I'm ready for it to end, and then we can judge him.
Well, that's true, Michael, but I don't agree with you or with Ray or probably with JP either. This is a terrible president, and people have a right to say right now they'll have another chance in a couple of years, in three more years.
I think maybe Bush during his presidency may have also ranked towards the bottom. He was down his approval was down in the low 30s for a good portion of his second term.
I wonder where Papa Bush showed up.
I don't have the full list. I think Teddy Roosevelt's an interesting one.
Well, he's on a mountain, you know.
That's true.
That's true. That's big.
And Obama is up 10 spots from the last time this was done in 2014, and that was while he was still president. So when you leave the presidency, people have a better sense to appraise your performance. And now people are looking back and saying Obama did pretty well.
But you know what's interesting about that, Mike? And that is that Trump spends all his time beating up on Obama. And he goes up 10 points. And Obama goes up 10 points. What does that say about what people are thinking?
Well, it
about
says
what
that
saying?
Political scientists and former members of this organization, who are also political scientists, look at things differently than the general public.
You think so?
Perhaps.
And Obama, when he was in office, did some blaming of Bush, right? A little bit?
Of course. Yeah, he took shots at him. I think they all do. I mean, he was much more subtle about it, and he would just talk about his accomplishments versus, but he didn't tweet attacks, personal ad hominem attacks on George
Correct.
W. Bush. And that's the difference.
Trump has really refined the art of blaming the predecessor.
Mm. Or blaming somebody else.
Blaming someone else. Mm.
Authorities in Florida say Stoneman Douglas High School, the site of last week's deadly shooting rampage, will remain closed today and tomorrow. The statement issued by the Broward County School says the goal is to initially allow staff to return by the end of the week to the school in Parkland, Florida, where 17 people were fatally shot last Wednesday. The statement did not elaborate on when students might be able to return. A law enforcement official says the man charged with killing 17 legally purchased at least 7 long guns, including an AK-47-style rifle he bought less than a month ago. The suspect, 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz, legally purchased an AR-15 that authorities say he used in the shooting. Federal law allows those 18 and over to buy rifles, and Cruz passed his background checks necessary to obtain the weapons. He appeared in court for the first time in person yesterday for a procedural hearing, and not via teleconference from jail. Meanwhile, more than 100 students from Marjory Stoneman High School are heading to Florida's capital to push state lawmakers to do something about gun violence.
Tallahassee.
They also plan to attend what they hope will be a massive march on Washington next month. Also in Los Angeles yesterday, hundreds of sign-carrying, chanting protesters converged on a downtown park demanding tougher background checks and other gun safety measures following last week's shooting in Florida. Mike.
Well, no, it does seem, and I'm skeptical that it is, but it does seem that there is enough momentum building to force Congress to take some kind of action. Exactly what they do probably won't be much if it's anything. Maybe they'll actually outlaw bump stocks, which are devices that the shooter in Las Vegas used to make his semi-automatic AR-15 behave like a machine gun and mowed down all those people who were out there at the concert. And they have not even made those illegal yet. They're sort of...
States are doing it. Massachusetts
But individual did. States are doing it. And the other is whether or not they're going to step up the background checks to make them more effective. And part of that is a very touchy issue, and that is whether if somebody has a protection order against them, can authorities take away their firearms? And that... Politicians are extraordinarily afraid of touching because they don't want any legalization of people having their guns confiscated. And the NRA is, you know, absolutely opposed to that. And they, you know, that's a threshold that probably won't get crossed this time. But with all these people protesting and these young people with their articulate voices talking about violence, you know, maybe it's a new wave. Maybe something will happen.
So there isn't a high school in America where people aren't aware that if their kids goes to school, where the kid is not aware of it and the parents aren't aware of it, I know that it's prevalent in the Berkshires now, this could be our last day. And if they don't do something about this, it will be really badly reflective on them. I don't care how much money they take from the darned... NRA, you know, I say darn because I don't want to get in trouble.
It's not even just the donations that they get, though. The NRA is able to rally people and rally the constituents of these various members of Congress to come on them strong and insist that they not put any restrictions into place.
Yeah, my view is that no legislation is going to be passed. Back in October, we had a guy in Las Vegas, as Mike said, that mowed down 50 people in Las Vegas, and there has not been an outlawing of bump stocks since then. NRA's position and playbook on this is they say, let's do something, but then when it's time to actually pass legislation, nothing happens. NRA and gun enthusiasts are really important to the Republican Party base. Trump said, you guys have delivered for me, so I'm going to deliver for you. And in addition to them being so important to the Republican base, they also have a big hold over a lot of Democrat senators, Claire McCaskill, John Tester, Heidi Heitkamp, and Joe Donnelly, and also that new senator in Alabama. So my view is no legislation is going to get passed.
Well, you know, I do think this the movement is cumulative. I think what happens is, as each of these things happen, people get more and more interested. The polling, by the way, is immense in America that something has to be done and that both the Congress and the president haven't done what they were supposed to do. And interestingly, those polls are showing Congress held more responsible than the president. You know, there's a clear majority who say the president isn't doing what he should, but the Congress has really been held responsible because people recognize that's what they should be doing. You know, the state of Connecticut, interestingly, is showing a demise, a lowering of gun problems because they have passed all kinds of stuff in the state. And, you know, we've always said, well, you know, if somebody come up from North Carolina, South Carolina with a gun, what good are state laws? But apparently they are.
Well, it'll be interesting because Florida is a very different state than Connecticut was and is now. And Governor Rick Scott in Florida, a Republican governor, is saying everything's on the table. And they'll talk about some restrictions, but it's pretty likely it will not be to the degree of Connecticut.
Well, even in New York, there was an article last week that we had up that talks about how AR-15s are allowed in New York State still. Now, there some styles of them aren't allowed, but there are AR-15s allowed in New York, and it's challenging to read all of these opinion editorials by everybody blaming the other side. Everybody's blaming each other, these incidents continue to happen. And my view is, in another week, there's going to be another media incident. And people are going to quickly forget about this just like they forgot about the Vegas massacre.
Well, you know, we don't really agree. I think this is cumulative. I think.
Well, I hope it is. I hope that this pulls together all of the different groups that are asking. I mean, even if you outlawed AR-15s and assault-type rifles, which had been outlawed and Congress allowed that to expire. They were outlawed in the 90s, and about 10 years ago, Congress allowed that to expire. If they would outlaw those, if they had been outlawed, this kid wouldn't have had that gun. He wouldn't have had this efficient tool to kill people with, and that's big. And if we can restrict access to those, that would be a big help.
Alan, you've been a vocal proponent for gun control for years on this program. What's the end game for you? What would you like to see done?
Well, obviously, you know, we have so many guns in America. I think I read somewhere 300 million. You know, one for every American, and I read somewhere else two for every American. I don't really know, but clearly the name of the game is to start to get guns off the street, to get guns out of people's hands. Look, the point has been made here this morning that this guy had a background check. You know, and we do know that the FBI is feeling a lot of pain here because they were told explicitly this guy's trouble, and they weren't able to get to it. Now, right now, many of us are big fans of the FBI for other reasons, but they're really having to take it on the chin for not doing it. I don't know if they could possibly do every single complaint that they had about every American.
May I ask? I have a question. If the Democrats take over the House and the Senate, do you think it's possible that they would pass an assault weapons ban to send it to President Trump's desk and see whether he would sign it or veto it? Do you think that's possible that they would do that?
I do. I think what's happened here is that, you know, you have a country of parents and children, people who go to school, and nobody quite understands, at least I don't understand, why the NRA is able to call these shots.
Well, the NRA is backed by the manufacturers of the firearms.
That's right.
And after President Obama left office, the sale of firearms went down. And it's when people are afraid that the Democrats are going to take away their guns and ban the future sale of guns, that's when they go out and stock up on them. And so this is all actually what happened. So regrettably and tragically, what happened in Florida has probably boosted gun sales.
Apparently it has. I read that.
Yeah.
In Professor Shartok's perfect world, do any Americans own guns?
Say again?
In your perfect, idealized world, would any American own a gun?
No.
Would they be allowed to own a gun?
No.
Well, that probably won't be the way things go.
Well, but Ray asked the question.
Yeah.
Yes.
The question was, in my world.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Mike, that ain't the way it's going to go.
Well, Australia had a mass killing back in the 90s, and they began a very strict program to take back guns. And it's been very controversial, but the amount of gun violence in Australia is plummeted because of very strict laws. Laws that just wouldn't get passed in the U.S.
And as I said before, in Connecticut, so we know this stuff works.
Mm-hmm. I'll mention one other thing that as history passes and you think about those moments about points in history and what happened, I thought that the New York Daily News had a very tough, hard-hitting picture of President Trump yesterday golfing 18 holes while just a few miles away there were two funerals for two of the 17 victims. And I think that the media is going to take that and really paint a picture of Trump golfing while there are funerals for the victims. I thought that was an unforced error on President Trump's part.
Really? I think he does it to annoy people. I think that's what he thinks he can do. I'm going to do whatever I want. And so far, I've gotten away with it. I am what I am.
Well, Ray, I know later on we'll talk to us about a story about how the polling numbers are showing some of Trump's policies are very popular.
Yeah, like the tax bill.
Yeah, and we will get to that one later on in this program. We have only just begun. The email address here is panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in today. We have Alan Shartok here, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and you at panel@wamc.org. We only have about a minute here before news. But this quoting from the New York Times today, after Florida school shooting, Russian bot army pounced 1 hour after news broke about the school shooting in Florida last week. Twitter accounts suspected of having links to Russia released hundreds of posts taking up the gun control debate, apparently on both sides of the debate. And this will get us into our second topic about the indictment late on Friday morning of 13 Russians charged with meddling in the 2016 election. It all dovetails quite nicely. Again, the email address is panel@wamc.org. It's the Roundtable Panel, and we will take a break, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Tuesday morning at 9:34. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable Panel, and our panel today, The Empire Reports, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain from the Times Union, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. You, of course, invited to join in as well with an email, panel@wamc.org, and we have emails.
We do, Ray, and thanks for weighing in. Mona says on the question of guns, why don't gun store owners refuse to sell automatic weapons like the one used in the Florida shooting? Some of them must have children.
It's a very, very, very profitable business selling both ammunition and firearms. And if they don't sell them, somebody else will come along and sell them. What did they say after this shooting? There's more gun stores in the U.S. than there are Starbucks and McDonald's
all over
the world. Some incredible statistic.
Well, even in enlightened New York, we have 16-year-olds are allowed to buy guns, and there are hundreds and hundreds, and if not thousands of New Yorkers every year that go into gun shops and buy guns.
You say enlightened New York?
Yeah, well, we're more enlightened here than other places. Yeah.
It's very elitist of you.
Say.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I like to think about the bartenders who, knowing that some people have had too much to drink, sell them another drink.
That's, I would say, a lot of bartenders.
Course, they do it, says Mona. And Dan says, one measure that could have prevented the Florida shooting is empowering courts to issue extreme risk protection orders. This would allow law enforcement and family members to petition a court to issue a restraining order to protect a person who is in danger to themselves and others for purchasing or possessing a firearm. The measure has passed the New York State Assembly. It's still held up by the Republican State Senate because a group of so-called independent Democrats allow them to retain power. Yeah, Dan, all of that's true, but here's the deal. Think about this kid, right? The people who were taking care of him had no idea, and they have so testified, that this kid was dangerous. right? Now we know he had been pulled out of class. We know that he'd been put in an alternative school and all the rest. But who was going to seek the order of protection? Okay.
It's really tough. And there are, how many troubled teens are there?
Right, but not, I mean, how do you know the difference between someone who's going through some trouble and someone who's going through some trouble and will be motivated to pick up a weapon and attack people with it? And they
well, one who threatens other students and also goes on Facebook saying, gosh, I'd like to be a professional killer.
Of course, in this case.
Yes, but
I mean,
who
is
supposed to do it? Yeah. In other words, anybody who reads Facebook and get that order of protection, who is likely to go and get it? That's my question. All right. Christopher says, where does a 19-year-old get the money? Good morning, panel. I thought of, by the way. Good morning, panel. Given the list of all the guns purchased, does anyone wonder where or how a 19-year-old can pay for those guns? Was this young man able to hold on a job in his questioned mental condition? No, I wondered about that business of where these,
I wonder about
where
that too.
Money
they
came
are
from.
Very expensive.
Yeah. Sean says, AR-15s, based on Rubio's incoherent response to the simple question about the right, in quotes, of citizens to own these things, it should be satisfying to watch he and his colleagues squirm answering these questions. Keep the pressure on. That's from Sean in Greenfield. And Ron says, guns aside, good morning, gentlemen, guns aside, how did this alleged gunman get into the school building? Does anyone know? Is this an issue? Thank you. And that's from Ron.
Well, that's an excellent question. How do you get in the school building? I know that in elementary schools around here, you have to buzz in, and a lot of the schools around here. Our email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. As I mentioned before the news at the bottom of the hour, this quoting from the New York Times, after Florida school shooting, Russian bot army pounced. 1 hour after news broke about the school shooting in Florida last week, Twitter accounts suspected of having links to Russia released hundreds of posts taking up the gun control debate. The accounts addressed the news with the speed of a cable news network. This, again, quoting from the New York Times. Some adopted the hashtag gun control now. Others used hashtag gun reform now and hashtag Parkland shooting. Earlier on Wednesday, before the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, many of those accounts had been focused on the investigation by Robert Mueller into Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. This follows Friday's news, and I think it happened after the roundtable on Friday, while Russian officials are scoffing at a U.S. indictment charging 13 Russians with meddling in the 2016 election. Several people who worked at the same St. Petersburg troll factory say they think the criminal charges are well-founded. The federal indictment issued Friday names a businessman linked to President Putin and a dozen other Russians. It alleges that Yevgeny Prigozhin, a wealthy restaurateur dubbed Putin's chef, paid for the internet operation that created fictitious social media accounts and used them to spread messages set to divide.
Well, the whole purpose here, apparently, is to cause chaos in America. So it really isn't that important to these guys that they're for one side or the other. The name of the game is to make America look foolish and to be eating its own. And I think that that's what's happening here.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's pretty much an understanding that the Russians have succeeded in everything they set out to do here.
Right. Do you think that, you know, the question that everyone is asking, but nobody really can answer, it's just a matter of opinion. Was there interference using the social media bots, et cetera, enough to swing the results of the 2016 presidential election?
Well, if you're asking me that question, I would answer, I don't care. Hmm. In other words, I have to assume that it did something. We don't know. If you have a feeling of chaos and you get a dictator type who comes in and says, I'm going to fix everything, and that's Trump, you know, there will be some people who say, yeah, things are terrible here. We have to go with this guy.
In terms of what I thought I thought it was really damaging how President Trump tied the FBI's failure to catch the killer in Florida on them focusing on Russia. I thought that was a very unfortunate tweet. Not a good thing for Trump to do. The other thing that I thought was interesting was that the Russians promoted Bernie over Hillary. They did not like Hillary, but they were promoting Bernie and Trump, so I thought that was interesting.
I don't know if it's whether they liked, but clearly they were playing all sides, and that was the game. That was exactly what they
intended. Divide and conquer, yeah.
So they liked Bernie, and then the other thing I thought was interesting was the Russian lawyer, the female Russian lawyer that met with Don Jr., which seems to be the biggest...
At Trump Tower?
At Trump Tower, yeah. Which seems to be the biggest public... piece of evidence that there was collusion, that she was not named in the indictment.
I don't know if you guys remember back in the late 90s and repeated often throughout the last 10 years, there was a Russian named Igor Panarin. He was a former KGB guy and now an alleged academic. And His theory in 1998, which continues to be out there, is that the U.S. would divide and there would be a civil war, he said, by 2010. So my question is this the social media propaganda, whatever this campaign is, designed to further that end? In other words, was Igor Panarin's prediction that the U.S. would break into parts in a civil war, all part of the same scheme that has us dealing with all this propaganda?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it has, of course, broken into political parts that we know. There are the Reds and the Blues, and we know that they're at war with each other, and that no matter what happens, the red states are sticking with this president. And you can talk about, his affairs, this is that, but nothing seems to sway that group of people or, by the way, the mass of Republican voters in this country. And virtually every poll shows that for the most part, they're sticking with them. So, I mean, I think that there is I've thought of this, by the way, Ray, that there really is a war sort of mentality here. You know, you go back to the Civil War and you see that, there was no amelioration of the hatred that the red states felt towards the blue states. And I'm sensing a lot of that right here.
Well, the difference now, though, Alan, is that the people who are divided politically live right next door to people, who feel one way and people who feel the other way. It isn't like it's only a certain place in the country. But there is a lot of division and a lot of chaos and a lot of, as there's arguments among people about what we should do, it does succeed in getting little done. And if the Russians intended to have chaos bring us down, it is certainly has us in a very bad place right now. Not that they alone can get credit for it. There's a lot of people who have different points of view, and there's a lot of people here who fuel that. And we are a nation divided. We're a lot of different people.
And I also don't remember during Obama's tenure Republicans saying, "Well, Obama supporters are bad people," and Obama supporters saying, "Well, Republicans that oppose Obama are bad people." But I hear that all the time now with people that are Trump supporters say the people that oppose Trump are really, really, they're bad people. And I hear that too from Democrats who say people that support Trump are bad people.
I think the Democrats and people who supported Obama used very harsh language describing the Tea Party. If you think back, they were the target. They were portrayed as extreme right wing, extremists, basically. Yes. And it was more polite and more civil. But it was today. It seems like all the gloves are off.
We have an all-star wrestling mentality now.
It does seem like that.
Yeah. We have to take a break. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller make up the panel. And we'll be right back. Well, if you're watching on our website, Mike Spain is getting funky. It is the roundtable panel. It's 9:46, a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We have J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok on the panel. And, of course, you at panel@wamc.org. And we have letters.
Michael says, panel, good morning, panel. Mike, sincere respect and admiration goes out to the Parkland teenagers that are speaking out. Not only the Parkland teenagers. teenagers all over the country, folks. They are bringing real hope to a very dark time. These are sad and strange days when some of the most lucid people in America aren't yet able to vote. Mike from Akard. Janet says, gun is NRA question. Is there any possibility of the NRA being designated as a terrorist organization? These mass shootings are clearly terrorist acts. The NRA clearly abets and supports them. Who makes the designation of terrorist organizations? Thanks, and that's from Janet. Chances of that happening are zero to none. All right. As you know, I'm sure you wrote that tongue in cheek. Margaret, school guard. Read how he got into the school. There was a guard who was also killed. Whether he was killed guarding an entrance or elsewhere, I do not know. Deirdre says, at an interview, one of the students in Florida stated there was only one entry point. In his words, our armed guard sacrificed his life for the students. He also stated there were frequent lockdown drills and the school prided itself on being prepared.
Okay.
And Molly says, red flags. Good morning, friends. As usual, you get my blood flowing in the morning. As to who's supporting the red flag about a troubled kid who's likely to resort to violence, if schools had social services they need, social workers, nurses, etc., it might be a start. And I don't mean a social worker who has almost 500 clients. I mean a social worker for each school. They can refer kids whom they deem a danger to the proper medical services. But, of course, this Congress and president have cut Medicaid services that might forestall these tragedies, and that's from Molly. And Michael says, FBI and the shooter. Hi, panel. After learning of the FBI's monitoring and lack of action, I actually found myself a little reassured that they wouldn't act quickly on things posted online. I hope we don't inspire the FBI to act too quickly in the future because of this. Love the show. Mike from Gardner. Norm says, use the same outlines that exist for alcohol. Shared liability for purveyors, age limits, proof levels, number of rounds, license required for sale, laws against distributing to minors, no public consumption or use. We have accepted rules for bars. We don't see them as violations of our rights to drink alcohol. Should be the same for guns. Thanks for the great show. And that's from Norm. Lucy says, effect on children. The thing that hit me the hardest is the fact that children as young as five are having drills in school in anticipation of there being an active shooter in the school. Reminds me of the drills we had in the 1950s. To say they scared me for life is not an exaggeration. I've lived with a vague sense of dread in me for my whole life. Besides protecting our children from shooters, we need to protect them from psychological trauma that this is causing, and that's from Lucy.
That is so funny, because we had this discussion yesterday by the fire at my house. I went to elementary school early 70s, but the Cold War is still raging, and we were talking about all those get under your desk drills and in
civil
the
defense.
Hallway. And the dreaded one was go home day because the bombs are coming and you're going to die. And so you had a go home drill. And still, I get a sort of a traumatic feeling about those elementary school drills. But what do? You have to do something.
That's so funny because, you know, I'm much older than everybody else.
Yes,
in the room,
true.
But I have to say, I remember ducking, get under the thing. And, you know, it never occurred to me to be scared about it. Do you understand what I'm saying? I just—you were innocent,
and you didn't see the present danger that it was suggesting.
Yeah.
Maybe it depended on the administrator. We had an administrator who was—he was a little zealous about the principal, school principal was a little zealous about these things. He enjoyed terrifying us, and mission accomplished. Mike, the Times Union has an interesting piece on the Prococo trial. It looks like maybe an appeal being set up already.
Well, that was a column today by our court reporter, Rob Gavin, who's been down in Manhattan covering the trial of Joseph Prococo and three others who are accused of being involved in a political corruption where Prococo, a former top aide to Governor Andrew Cuomo, is accused of selling his influence in government to help three businessmen get projects going. And Rob Gavin has been speculating that the judge in the case, who's a very kind of outspoken, a woman who was a former prosecutor herself, Valerie Caproni, she told one of the defense attorneys who wanted to have another chance to interview the or to cross-examine Todd Howe. Todd Howe is another former aide in the Cuomo administration, in the Mario Cuomo administration, who has connections to Andrew Cuomo when he was working for the Department of Housing and Urban Development before he came back to New York. And he's their star witness, the prosecution's star witness in the case. And one of the defense attorneys wanted more time with Todd Howe. And the judge said, hey, you know, save it for the 17th floor, which was a reference to where the U.S. Court of Appeals is, suggesting that your client probably will be convicted and then you can use it. Use your argument here in the appeal.
Well, that's
that you
interesting.
Make. Yeah, it was just, but it was not done in front of the jury, and it just was a very interesting comment. And you can interpret it any way you like, and that's the way Rob Gabin interpreted it.
By the way, the way I'm interpreting it is that the judge was making a mistake on at least one front.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, what
because
mistake
you're
is
saying,
that?
Yeah. You're, go ahead, you say.
You're saying you're going to be convicted.
Yeah.
I don't think that they are going to be convicted. I think that this is going badly for the prosecution. And I try to put myself in the place of the jurors, of a juror. And that's all you need is a juror to hang this jury. And that person is saying, okay, they got this guy, Todd Howe. He's lied about everything. He's a liar. In fact, he's a lying liar. And they have so many places that he's lied, so many places that he's had to take pleas, that somebody on that jury is going to say, wait a second now, you know, these are people he's accusing who had a different kind of life. I don't believe it. So I'm thinking that it could well be that they don't get a conviction here.
If I'm the defense attorney, I make a motion for a mistrial right now based on that statement alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, except it wasn't in front of the jury.
It wasn't in front of the jury, so it didn't.
But if it shows prejudice by
a
judge.
It may reveal that the judge has that kind of thing. But it was just a throwaway comment in one sense.
Interesting.
And certainly, if they are convicted, I'm sure it will come up as part of the appeal.
I agree with Dr. Chartok that this is not going well for the prosecution. The biggest news that's come out of this trial over 3 weeks is that the star witness got arrested for violating the terms of his agreement. He got arrested for lying. And so these defense attorneys, all they have to do is go up and tell the jury this. All of this is resting on Todd Howe, who everybody knows is a liar. Is there not some little skimper, some little bit of a shadow of a doubt? And I read in Alan Chartok's column this weekend, he said
nice.
That this case has fizzled out. He said that this case has fizzled out, and I think it's fizzled.
Well, you should also realize that prior to Todd Howe's testimony, there was evidence that people from Competitive Power Ventures, a Orange County-based firm that wanted to get some state approvals, one of the principals in that company found a job for Lisa Percoco, the schoolteacher wife of Joe Percoco, the person, one of the people on trial, where she'd be paid almost $300,000 to teach a class about energy, maybe six times over the course of a couple of years, which is very good pay. And, you know, they're saying they did it as a favor to Percoco. They had bonded with him, and it was not anything with an expectation of him influencing the state. But I think that's pretty compelling evidence.
Hey,
so it'll be how the jury looks at it.
Hey.
What?
There's a big difference between no-show and low-show.
Right.
This woman is showing up. You know, they're paying her a lot of money. And by the way, does anybody in this room really think that nobody ever did a political favor for somebody by getting them a job? I mean, that's not against the law. That happens all the time. If it was against the law, I suspect Mrs. Percoco might have been indicted, which she wasn't.
She did perform the job, evidently.
And she performed the job. They say, by the way, they got witnesses to say not very well.
But you can't be prosecuted for being incompetent.
You think that nobody ever got a job because they had a relative on a school board in a town in a region and didn't perform well? Are you kidding?
Well, the trial is supposed to wrap up this week. Testimony is supposed to wrap up this week with summations, and maybe the judge will send it to the jury at the end of the week or early next week, and it'll be over. But there's more to come. I mean, the next corruption trial, which will also be in Manhattan, will feature six defendants, including SUNY's the former head of SUNY Polytechnic Institute, Aline Calieros. And that focuses on charges of bid rigging for upstate development projects. And then you have the retrials of former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and former Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos. And there's a few others involving the Nassau County Executive and a former Republican state senator. And all this is happening in a year when every single lawmaker, legislator, state legislator, senator, and assemblyman is up for re-election, and the governor's running for re-election. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on state lawmakers to put some oversights in there, put ethics as a major,
We say that every year.
I know, but it just seems like the momentum is there.
I hope you're right, Mike.
or laws that control campaign finance spending.
Right. And dream on. This is...
You're very cynical.
I'm cynical. I mean, look at the history here. These guys don't move. They're a bunch of there's a technical word for it, bums, and they are not about to kill the golden goose. It's that simple. That's why they elect a guy like Boss Hastie from the Bronx, who's the speaker, or
John Flanagan.
Flanagan
from Long Island.
Thank you for that, yes, Mike.
Right. We have to take a quick break, but I know JP wants to weigh in here.
Oh, well.
Did you? I thought you were about to say something.
Well, no. I've been watching this trial very closely for 3 weeks, and every day I'm excited to put up a really exciting headline, and nothing really comes out that's exciting. This is just business as usual in New York politics.
And what's that URL again, JP?
Oh, EmpireReportNewYork.com.
And let's not forget
And TimesUnion.com.
Right, and TimesUnion.
And WAMC.org. All right, we got all the plugs in. Let's take a break. It's the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain on the panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Let the jury be told that J.P. Miller, pretty hip, figured out it was Herbie Hancock for bumper music. 5 minutes after 10 o'clock on a Tuesday that feels like a Monday, the panel is J.P. Miller from the Empire Report, Mike Spain from the Times Union / Knickerbocker News, and Alan Chartok from WAMC. And you can always join in the fun by weighing in via email, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. That's your cue.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jay says, bad people. Good morning, panel. JP commented that both sides of the political divide refer to to one another as bad people. I want to point out that people that espouse racist and misogynist policies and practices are indeed bad people, and by extension, those that support them, turning a blind eye to the racism and misogyny, are also bad people. If someone is holding their nose about this administration not speaking out against the reprehensible racism and misogyny, they are culpable, period. And that's from Jay. Brucey, would it be better to say inactive, intentional, or knowing coordination? Is it a better frame for an important potential finding by the special counsel's investigation? If there is an indictment naming prominent members of the Trump campaign intentionally coordinated with Russia to damage Clinton in key geographic areas, that would be something. Collusion is vague, and Trump has gamed the term. And that's from Brucey. And Jim says, American division. Dear panel, Alan mentioned that the red side harbor an unprecedented animosity towards the blue side, which is true, but so is the opposite. I think I did say that they were both. There was a sort of civil war mentality. You only have to watch CNN and read the New York Times or even listen to the Roundtable over the past year or so to realize that, and that's Jim in Bennington and Rob from says on the Second Amendment. I think it's time to start focusing on a well-regulated militia part of the Second Amendment. If people want to own an assault weapon, it should be kept in a well-regulated armory run by a well-regulated militia. By the way, the line being necessary to the security of a free state is as outdated as the Third Amendment. And that's from Rob in Del Mar. Mike, you have something to
breaking add. News. Unfortunately, we have no TV here in Studio A.
Yes, you know why?
Yeah, Yeah, I know why, and it irritates me. So Mike Spain has some breaking news.
No, I'm just seeing an alert from the New York Times that the special counsel on Russia has charged a lawyer with making false statements about the work he did as a Trump advisor in Ukraine years ago.
So let's, if we have any wire copy in there in the newsroom, maybe we'll get that in a little bit.
Hint.
We'll carry on in a moment. This was in the New York Times, I believe, today. Tax overhaul gains public support, buoying Republicans. The tax overhaul that President Trump signed into law now has more supporters than opponents, buoying Republican hopes for this year's congressional elections. The growing public support for the law coincides with an eroding Democratic lead when voters are asked which party they would like to see control Congress, and it follows an aggressive effort by Republicans backed by millions of dollars of advertising from conservative groups to persuade voters of the law's benefits. As you know, many political scientists, including some in this room, said it'll be a wave election in 2018. Are those political scientists still willing to make that claim?
Well, if you're referring to me, Ray, and I suspect you are with your tongue in your cheek.
I don't have any license to be a political scientist.
No, I don't think you get a license.
And your hand on your little Van Dyke beard going back and forth.
Yeah,
I'm telling you now that there is going to be a wave.
Okay.
And that because the key thing to watch in the polling that we're seeing now is whether the Democrats or the Republicans are more turned on in defense of their party and of making change. And certainly the Democrats are. It's going to be a huge wave. There was also an article, I believe, in the Times, which made it clear that the Republicans think that's going to happen also.
I agree with Dr. Shartok.
You've been agreeing with him too often.
I have an undergraduate degree in political science, not a doctorate.
I'll call you Junior.
I agree. It's still going to be a wave election. The people that are anti-Trump are certainly more excited and invigorated than the people that are pro-Trump. But on the tax cuts, there was an interesting article in Crain's this morning with a guy saying my paycheck went up 4.4% last week. Think about that. Most it has ever increased this decade.
The paycheck went up because less is being taken out of his withholding tax?
Yes. And right. the most it's ever gone up in a decade. That's going to be hitting people's paychecks in New York. And I think that Governor Cuomo has gone a little too far on demonizing the tax cuts because I think 80 or 90% of New Yorkers are going to see a benefit from it.
Until they file their state taxes.
And what was the theme of the Bill Clinton campaign back in the 90s?
It's the economy, stupid.
Right. So the economy really, really, really matters. People are 51% of Americans are now saying they think the tax bill is good, the one that we were deriding only a month or two ago when it was being rammed through by Congress. The real proof will be whether the other side of the tax bill, the huge, gaping $1.5 trillion deficit that it creates and the ensuing reduction in all kinds of social programs, cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security have to be made to balance the budget. And let's not forget that while this gentleman is getting $4 an hour more in his paycheck or a 4% increase in his paycheck because of the reduction in withholding taxes, some people making a lot more money are getting hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in reductions and a lot of other favorable treatment under this tax plan. They were smart. The Republicans were smart. They threw a few bones to the middle class, and now they'll hold off on being so upset because they're getting more in their weekly paycheck. But the chickens will come home to roost.
I agree.
That's all?
Well, I mean, look, a lot of people are going to get hosed later on.
And thank you for saying that.
Saying what?
Well, I guess you could say hosed. That's all right.
What's wrong with hosed?
That's fine. Continue.
Hose comes off of a fire truck,
right?
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you get wet from it. Why are you shaking your head?
Continue,
Let's
Professor.
Let's not argue about metaphors
Such a
here.
Mind you have. I think what's going to happen is somebody who is able to deduct their state and local taxes on Long Island, for example, and you don't have to be very rich to do that. I mean, you have a house that a little tiny house, you can be paying $25,000 in taxes on that house. That means you're going to have to eat $15,000 when it comes to your federal tax as well as the state tax rate. You know, and he's coming up with a Cuomo's coming up with what could only be called, and I've introduced you all to this word before, a verschlugene solution.
Verschlugene.
Verschlugene means, you know.
Right. Don't spell it, but it means crazy.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, the idea that that all businesses are going to have to put the payroll.
I don't think that'll ever happen. But he's also now talking about letting people, take it as charity when you pay your taxes, mark it off as charitable deductions, and that would cover you. But yeah. I don't think that will get through either.
I agree. The deficit that they've put in place is a disaster, and their spending is disgusting. But when you have people that are getting a large bump in pay that they're not used to getting a large bump in pay for the last 10 years from their bosses, and all of a sudden they got a bump in pay to be a politician that is hammering against that, I wouldn't want to be in that position.
JP, you are so right. No, you are really right.
Wow, you guys agree with each other today.
Well, because he's smart. You're so right. This is a country which hates taxes. That we hate taxes. Every year we go to the accountant, and the accountant says, "Well, you have to pay a little bit more than you thought you were going to pay." And every year they say, "Why don't you take more out of your paycheck?" So my paycheck now has less and less and less in it because I keep taking more and more and more out in order to affect the way it is at the end. We hate paying taxes. We pay them. That's all there is to it.
We've demonized tax paying, but in fact, you should be proud to pay taxes. Now, you don't want to be
paid. Oh, I am.
You shouldn't have to pay unfairly, and others shouldn't have an advantage over you, and they should not be able to escape their fair share. That's what I think ticks people off. But, I mean, it pays for our military. It pays for our clean water. It pays for our clean air. It pays for our roads and our police and our schools. Those are good things to spend your money on.
Well, first of all, I agree with you. We should all be proud to be supporting for what we need to support. I'm just telling you, in the bosom, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, whatever.
In the bosom of every American comes this business about we're paying a lot of taxes. And even liberals feel that way.
And opinion of government and what government does is at all-time low. There's an article last week that shows that in New York State, we have 289,500 state employees with an annual salary of a combined $14 billion. Do you think that maybe—
$14 billion with a B.
Yes. So do you That's think impressive. That maybe New York State government could maybe get by with, 250,000 employees or 225,000 employees? We only pay them $12 or $13 billion a year. So that is why Americans want to pay less taxes, because they don't have a trust in government that they're spending it well.
Absolutely. And the timing of this increase in your take-home pay, as it's known, will continue through November when the election is, this midterm election. The negative impact of it, you know, with the deficit and everything else, and you won't have to pay your 2018 income taxes, where you'll see you're only allowed to deduct a limited amount of money from it because of the tax law change. That won't be till next January. So it's clever. It was really clever timing. Give them something up now and take it later.
But what does the state of New York do ultimately if most people now with a doubled standard deduction do not take itemization? What then does the state of New York do? And that's why I think...
Are you speaking from a personal perspective?
Well, they're talking about having a separate Schedule C just for New York. So you could take the standard deduction on the federal tax bill and then do a Schedule C.
Is that going through?
Going through. No, that's one of the discussions. I mean, we don't know what's going to make it through.
Yeah. This has made interesting hoops
it'll be good
for
accountants.
State lawmakers
to jump
through.
It'll be good for accountants.
Very good. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Shartok, listen to this. This is from the Daily News. Drinking alcohol, the key to living past 90. When it comes to making it into your 90s, booze actually beats exercise, according to a long-term study.
We've been waiting for this one for a long time.
Researchers discovered that subjects who drank about 2 glasses of beer or wine a day were 18% less likely to experience a premature death. The Independent reports. Meanwhile, participants who exercised 15 to 45 minutes a day cut the risk by only 11%.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. And I must say, I thank you for bringing that up. And on Food Friday, I guess you should celebrate by having yet another beer person come on.
Here's the interesting thing. They tracked people, and they say you're 18 less. They tracked people over 90. And they say you're 18% less likely to experience a premature death. I would say if you're at 90, there is no such thing as a premature death.
Right, but you've got to understand they're interviewing people who are 90 and asking them about how they got there. There's a lot of other issues that don't let people make it to that survey.
What do you mean?
They're also saying, they're not around. Okay, if you drink one or two glasses of alcohol, I know very few people that drink one or two. Most people either don't drink or they have maybe six or seven or
one or two a day. I know plenty of people who have one or two.
I disagree. I think there's a lot of people who have a glass of wine at dinner and that's all.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Or even, you know, one.
A brewski.
You know what? After the show, we'll all go out and we'll buy Alan two beers.
Okay.
And then you'll live till 90. Why are you looking at me that way?
We're all thinking of you, Alan.
And then the other thing is about this article in the Daily News. Other factors were found to boost longevity, including weight. Participants who were slightly overweight but not obese cut their odds of an early death by 3%. Quote, it's not bad to be skinny when you're young, but it's very bad to be skinny when you're old.
You may be right about that. I went to my doc a couple of years back, one of my doctors, and he said, you should put a few more pounds on.
You see?
And I said, why is that? He said, well, if something goes wrong, it'd be nice to have a little bit extra.
You make a point.
You know, maybe you know, when you get to a certain age, I don't know what that age is.
76.
76. Yeah. You start to, you know, eat a little more. Enjoy life.
Yeah. This is what I've been telling him now for at least 10 years. Enjoy yourself. Have that cookie.
Now, I'm interested in what you just said about, you know, where you are now, you know, being not being obese, but yeah, having a little extra weight.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of edification, where would you put yourself in that group?
First of all, I'm 53. Second of all, I don't want to live to over 90, so your question is moot, sir.
I accept your explanation. I'm just worried about you because I love you.
Really?
Yeah.
So what else is new over at the Times Union, Mike Spain?
Well, we have a few interesting stories today. One is about the Brian Nearing, who writes he's our environment writer. He has a story about a lot of pharmaceuticals that are making its way into the Hudson River. They're not sure what the impact will be on wildlife and fish, but they're testing fish, and some fish are hepped up on caffeine.
I saw that.
Some have all kinds of, you know, heartburn medicine in them. They have, blood pressure medicine in them and acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, that kind of thing.
So is that from people flushing it down the drain, or is that coming out of people then going?
Then it gets flushed down the drain.
Yeah.
I think both. They in fact, down near Kingston is where they had the highest concentration of these, near their sewage treatment plant. So these sewage treatment plants along the Hudson River from Albany down to New York City are not catching all of these and filtering these out. And that's why health experts say you shouldn't flush your old drugs down the toilet. You should dispose of them with local police when they have these, you know, hand-ins, and et cetera, et cetera.
which is interesting, because if you get up when I get up in the morning, like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and you turn on the BBC, they had a fascinating article today about a program about a Greek, a guy who has decided that he wants to take the medicines that otherwise would be thrown out and make sure that people who really need them, because a lot of people in Greece are, you know, poverty level and can't get things, and that we might take a lesson from that makes a certain amount of sense, that if everybody looks in their medicine cabinet, you find out what you got. I have brought in the past my stuff to the police station.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I want to make sure that we consider this, because, you know, I know the pharmaceutical companies won't like it.
Well, the real
that's
answer
a heck of an idea.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good idea. It's just very difficult to manage it, and the reality is that these pharmaceutical companies they don't have to charge that.
And they'll fight it. And by the way, if you want to hear that story, just go to the BBC today and say recycled pharmaceuticals. It'd be very interesting.
They have expiration dates, though, don't they?
That's right. And the guy who's doing it in Greece says there's so much stuff, even before the expiration date that they can really use it.
Very interesting.
They also, I think I heard on WAMC about how the expiration dates, things still work 10 years after that.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Some do, some don't. I mean, some do deteriorate and some keep their properties. Yeah.
Well, our email address here is panel@wamc.org. J.P. Miller, what is on the Empire Report today?
Well, the Empire Report has a really groundbreaking, tremendous story about Jimmy Fallon going up to upstate New York this weekend to celebrate
his upstate where Yonkers.
Well, he went
Rochester,
to Fair, he went to Fairport, New York, and was at Mulconry's Irish Pub and Restaurant in Fairport Saturday night with his wife.
Yeah,
and they've got photos and videos of Jimmy Fallon hanging out in the upstate pub, and it really looks like it was a heck of a
story.
Party.
Is that Syracuse covered that or?
Yeah, Syracuse.
That is
yes.
The vital news we're looking for.
Mm. Wow, it's really, really tremendous photos and video that you can see.
Okay, good. If only we're all allowed to ask one question, I have a question. Who's Jimmy Fallon?
Who's Jimmy Fallon? Yes.
He's an honorary degree holder from the College of St. Rose
correct.
In
he's
Albany, where he did attend, and he's from very close to your
Saturday Night Live alum.
I really knew. Okay. But attend versus graduate. You know, they say so-and-so is getting married to so-and-so. She attended the College of St. Rose.
He did leave St. Rose without graduating.
But he got an honorary degree.
But then he was brought back and accepted an honorary degree. So
this is fun. And I got to say, we'll do another roundtable tomorrow. That's how much fun we had. J.P. Miller, thank you for being here.
Thanks
website
for
again.
Me, Ray. EmpireReportNewYork.com. Thank you.
And Mike Spain, the Knickerbocker News website?
www.timesunion.com.
And Alan Shartok, thank you, sir.
Thank you for what?
For my continued employment. It's the roundtable. We'll
You're getting a little more in your paycheck this week.
I don't think so. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.